भगवद गीता भगवान श्री कृष्णा डिक्लेयर्स टू अस दैट ए वाइज मैन इज सिचुएटेड इन सेल्फ रियलाइजेशन ही कंसिडर्स a clod of dirt and gold to be the same. He considers honor and dishonor to be the same. He sees no difference between pleasures and pains which come upon the senses. In other words, such a person, he is seeking his happiness within. Therefore, he rejoices within, and he is illumined within. But one who is not intelligent enough to find the precious peace within his own heart, such a person, like a beggar, wanders through various species of life in this world, seeking the enjoyment of the senses. We are living in the age which is called Kali Yuga. It is an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. It is an age where money is God, where people are ready, anxious, and hungry for the power to control. But very few people can appreciate the essence of life, which is to become the humble servant. It is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the Pandavas, after they were victorious in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Lord Sri Krishna coronated Maharaj Yudhisthira as the king. At that time, this entire planet Earth was one country. It was known as Bharatvarsha. And there was one supreme emperor, and that was the emperor of the Kuru dynasty, who was Maharaj Yudhisthira. And there were many other kings in other lands, but each and every one of them, they were obliged to offer respect and rule their kingdom according to the sweet will and direction of Maharaj Yudhisthira. So of course, the Pandavas, they were the dear friends of Lord Sri Krishna. Personally, they had no interest in acquiring a kingdom. But because Maharaj Yudhisthira was the very embodiment of Dharma, Krishna, out of his mercy toward all living beings, he wanted to give everyone the chance to be given the proper direction in life. It is said in the third chapter of Gita, Yadyar acharati sreshtas tatta evetarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokasthan anumaratate. That what the great men do, the common men follow. Whatever standard they set by their exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So therefore, we find within the scriptures, there are many, many great histories of kings of the earth. In fact, in the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a description by Shukadeva Goswami. What are the qualifications of an authorized Purana? And one of the most important characteristics of a genuine Puranic literature is it must explain the history and the lives of great kings who were surrendered to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So we find in Srimad Bhagavatam There is the story of King Parikshit, the story of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the story of King Ambarish, the story of King Dhruva, and King Prahlad, and King Agnidra, and King Rishabdev, and King Bharat. We find the story of King Nimi and King Janaka. These are a few of many of the descriptions. Because the king is supposed to be the representative of God for the kingdom. He is supposed to be Dharmaraj. He is supposed to be the protector of the principles of religion. The Sanskrit word kshatriya means one who protects the innocent from pain. And the greatest pain is adharma, or irreligion. Because where there is irreligion, there will naturally be violence, thievery, exploitation, and so many other vices. Therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he accepted the kingdom as a humble service to the Supreme Personality of God. And it is described that after Krishna left the planet, he returned to his eternal abode, Goloka Vrindavan. At that time, Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandava brothers, they had absolutely no more interest in remaining on this earth. Try to understand their mentality. Most people, to fight that battle of Kurukshetra, it was such a tremendous effort to win a kingdom. And he won the kingdom of the earth. He was the proprietor, factually, the king is the proprietor of the entire land. 1/6 of all wealth throughout the entire planet was liable to his taxation. He lived in the most luxurious palace. He had a loving wife, a beautiful family. He had power, control, money, everything man can desire beyond our imagination. Here in Bombay, we have to struggle so hard just to maintain one little flat. And we're thinking if we have a nice little flat with a room for each member of the family and we get enough food, we're thinking how great we are, how much we are victorious in life. Well, imagine the living conditions of Maharaj Yudhisthira. But he was not the slightest bit attached to anything except the service to Krishna. He was accepting these things only on behalf of God. And as soon as Lord Sri Krishna left this world, Maharaj Yudhisthira saw nothing attractive about his palace, nothing attractive about all of his hundreds and thousands of servants and maidservants, and all of his wealth, and all of his gold jewelry, and his beautiful crown. Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, you know, they were willing to beg, borrow, steal, cheat, do anything just to have that crown on their head. But Maharaj Yudhisthira, he didn't see any difference between that crown and a lump of earth on the ground. He was only wearing it because it was a way that he could be the humble servant of Krishna. And therefore, after Lord Sri Krishna left this world, Maharaj Yudhisthira being responsible, please know that Maharaj Yudhisthira was a sadhu. Sadhu doesn't mean someone who wears matted hair or shaves his head and wears the saffron cloth. Sadhu, according to the definition of Lord Kapiladeva, is one whose every act, every word, and every thought is in the service of Sri Hari. That is a sadhu. In fact, such great kings were called upon by the name of Rajarshi. Rajarshi means Raja Rishi. Rishi means a sadhu, a saint, who happens to be the king. A saint is one who is the humble servant of God. And therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira, after he responsibly saw that Parikshit, who was his grand nephew, was old enough and capable of ruling the kingdom, with great joy, he turned everything over to Maharaj Parikshit. As soon as possible, he just turned it all over. He gave him his throne, he gave him his crown, he gave him all of his armies, all of his wealth, everything. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, personally, he put on the cloak of a mendicant. And he took the staff of renunciation. And with bare feet, he began to walk to the jungles in the direction of the great Himalayas. Simply to show society that whoever you are, you must maintain your responsibilities in this world in the service of God. But when you come to that age where others can take over your responsibilities, your only business is self-realization. Your only business is to absorb your consciousness thoroughly in the loving thought and memory of the Supreme Personality of God. At that time, Maharaj Parikshit, following in the footsteps of his grandfather, Arjuna, and his great predecessor, Maharaj Yudhisthira, he ruled the kingdom in a spirit of complete compassion. It is described that the king is responsible for each and every one of his, what is called in Sanskrit, praja. Praja means the subjects. He did not only consider every human being without any discrimination of caste, but he even considered the lower species as his praja. In other words, every citizen of his kingdom, even the plants and the animals and the women and the children and the rich and the poor and the literate and the illiterate, they all deserved equally protection. And they all deserved the right life in the service of God. So Emperor Parikshit, he would regularly personally mount his great chariot, which is drawn by great powerful black horses. And he would travel throughout the world to make sure that each and every citizen was properly being guided in their spiritual life and protected from those who embodied irreligion. Now, because he was so powerful, and he was so strict in his discipline, the whole world was very happy. The whole world was full of prosperity. Where does wealth come from? Prosperity comes from pleasing Krishna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Jagya shishta shina shanto, jagya rathat kamanon yatra lokamam karma bandana. That when you perform proper sacrifice and please the Lord, then everything is provided for you. People in this world are thinking that rain comes from trees. Huh? Isn't that what the ecologists say? That the more trees there are, the more rain. This is a material conception. If we want to understand how this material world is working, we have to understand by the person who has created this world. Just as if you buy an IBM computer, you don't go to the local Indian Oil petrol station to ask the mechanic how to work your computer. You have to find from the manufacturers of IBM how the proper computer is worked and how you can get the best function from it. So similarly, if we want to understand the laws of nature, we have to approach the lawmaker. If we want to understand how this creation is working, we have to hear from the manufacturer of this creation. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetu nani nukonteya jagad viparivartite. That this material existence is working under my direction. It is created by me. So Krishna says in Gita, Anand bhavanti bhutani parajanyan anasambhava jagya bhavati parajanyan jagya karma shumabhava. This means that all living beings subsist on food grain. And food grain is born from rain. Without rain, there is no life. There is no food. And he said, rain is born from the performance of sacrifice. Sacrifice is born from the performance of one's prescribed duties. And prescribed duties all originate in the service of God. So the ultimate sacrifice is the service of God. When that is taking place, it is described in Bhagavad Gita, then all the demigods are pleased. When you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is satisfied. When Lord Hari is pleased by your service, all the devatas who are in charge of the various departments of this creation will provide plentifully everything. And we read in the scriptures, when there was great religious kings who were surrendering in their lives in the humble service of the Lord, and who was the humble servant of every citizen, when they were ruling, then there was nothing but prosperity and joy throughout the land. There was nothing in shortage. Now in the age that we are living, we may think, this sounds like a utopia. This sounds impossible. It sounds like mythology. Because of the very, very deep-rooted corruption all around us, it does appear impossible. But where there is pure religion and pure leadership, it is natural. So therefore, Maharaj Parikshit, upon his chariot, he rode throughout the entire civilization, making sure everyone was being properly protected. And he was more wrathful than death personified for anyone who dared to exploit the innocent. At that time, he came across a very, very black-hearted man. This person was Kali personified. He had a very, very dark complexion. He had very evil characteristics. He was low class in every respect. But on his head was the crown of a king. And on his body was the royal robes of a king. And Maharaj Yudhisthira understood, Maharaj Parikshit understood, that this is how Kali will conquer all lands. Through low-class, sinful-minded people, when they take the position of kings and leaders of nations, then there will not be the protection of the innocent. There will not be proper disciplinary actions upon the wicked. The laws of the state will not be one with the laws of God. There will be exploitation. In fact, it is prophesied that in the age of Kali Yuga, the kings and the leaders who are supposed to protect the innocent will be the worst enemies of the innocent. It is described that taxation will be so cruelly enforced with such high rates that people will have to leave civilization and live in the wilderness and in the forests and in the jungles just to escape the persecution of the leaders of nations, of the government. So when Maharaj Pariksit came across this cruel pretender in the form of a king, he saw that with a stick in his hand, he was beating the innocent cow and beating the innocent bull. The cow and the bull were both standing with tears in their eyes. The cow is the mother of humanity. She provides milk, which is liquid religiosity personified, to everyone. She nurses practically all children in their infancy in the human species of life. She's the very embodiment of kindness and generosity. And the bull, like the father, he is the personification of dharma or religion. And his four legs represent the pillars of religion, which are truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity, and mercy. But here is the king who is supposed to be the very, very protector of these four pillars, acting utterly merciless. So Maharaj Pariksit, he did not depend on courtroom systems or legal devices. Empowered by God, he drew his sword and was about to kill this rascal. And when Kali personified saw that he was in a hopeless condition, standing before the representative of God, he did not have a chance. He got down on his hands and knees and he began to beg for mercy. I surrender to you. Any king will never kill a person who has surrendered to him. So Maharaj Pariksit, he lowered his sword. He said, all right, because you have surrendered, it is my duty to release you. He said, but you cannot disturb anyone as long as I am here. That is my command. And Kali told him that you are the king, you are providing for everyone, you must also provide a place for me. Maharaj Pariksit said, yes,
that is true.
Therefore, I will give you four places to reside. And in each of these four places, you will be the king. You will have complete control. Wherever there is illicit sex, wherever there is any form of intoxication, wherever there is the slaughter of innocent animals, and wherever there is whimsical gambling, you can be the king of all those places. You can reside there and have complete control with all your wickedness. Kali, with folded palms, he responded, Maharaj, please understand that you are such a powerful king that none of these things exist in your kingdom. I have looked and searched throughout this entire planet, and none of these things can take place. Because the rogues and the thieves are so fearful of you, they have to act piously. Therefore, no one is in fear. And there is no sinful activity. So what you have given me is all theoretical. You have to give me something practical, a place that I can go and reside.
And Maharaj Parikshit, he said, yes, what you are saying is true. Therefore, I will give you one more place.
Wherever there is
the greedy accumulation of wealth and gold, you can live there.
Because wherever people are hoarding wealth,
illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating will follow close behind. And when Kali was given that benediction, he was very satisfied.
Now Maharaj Parikshit, as he ruled, Kali hardly found any place to live.
How did Kali Yuga finally come into this world?
Maharaj Parikshit would not let him in. But understand that the illusory energy is very powerful, very strong.
You see, Maharaj Parikshit's greatness was, he was always humble and obedient to the Brahmins, to the saintly persons. That is what makes a king great.
As long as a king is the humble servant of the saintly Brahmins, then that king is actually the representative of God. But as soon as he takes the decisions of the kingdom in his own hands, and in the hands of political ministers, then he becomes the enemy of the people in general. So therefore, the Brahmin class was very powerful. And of course, a Brahmin is not by birth, but by quality. Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita, nowhere in the Vedic scriptures, is caste by birth accepted. The Varnashram system, Krishna says in Gita, is according to one's qualities and one's actions. Chatur Varnamayasthirstam Guna Karma Vibhaga. Therefore, a Brahmin is one who is peaceful, self-controlled, merciful, compassionate, forgiving, learned in the scripture, and one who is dedicating his life in the service of God. That is a Brahmin. It has nothing to do with wearing a 50 paisa thread around your body. It has nothing to do with what birth you're in. In fact, it is said by Lord Kapiladeva, the author of the Sankhya philosophy. He describes that Brahmanu Chura Nama Granantiyate, that even if one who was born in a family of untouchable dog eaters, if he is chanting the name of God and living according to religious principles, he must be accepted as a Brahmin. Not only that, he's better than a Brahmin. Because such a person, it is described, he can deliver all humanity by his spiritual potency. But someone who is a so-called Brahmin, who is not devoted in the service of God and calling out the names of God, he cannot even deliver himself.
So there was a Brahmin. It is a long story. He was the son of Samyak Rishi. His name was Sringi. And he had the powers of a Brahmin, but he did not have the purity of the heart. And because of this, Kali entered into this Brahmin. When the spiritual class of men become corrupt, the whole society crumbles and falls into utter degradation. So through this Brahmin boy, who was inexperienced by nature, he cursed Maharaj Pariksit to die in 7 days. And after he left, and after people of the world lost their trust in the Brahmins due to this, there was no longer a head in society. The Varnashram system is Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. It is the parts of the social body. It's like you have a body. The head gives direction. The head gives intelligence. The arms protect. The belly nourishes. And the legs carry the rest of the body. So similarly, the social system is like a body. The Brahmins are meant to give direction and intelligence. The Kshatriyas are like the arms which protect. The Vaishyas, they are like the belly which provides food and trade. And the Sudras, they are the legs which serve and carry the rest of the parts of the body. Now, when the head is no longer qualified, then the whole body is lost. There's no direction. So when the Brahmin class becomes corrupt, what happens is the other classes of society lose their faith in their direction, lose their faith in their wisdom. And thus, nobody has any direction anymore. The religious principles are neglected. People do not understand what is their prescribed duties. And what do you have? You have capitalism and communism and socialism, all these isms. Communisms, the Sudras want the supreme control. Correct? Capitalism, the Vaishyas want supreme control. And there are so many dictatorships where the Kshatriyas want supreme control. But factually, the control of the society is meant to be in the hands of the Brahmins. And the Brahmins are supposed to be completely in poverty. Factually, in the Vedic civilization, when it was true, unless you were qualified to be a Brahmin, you did not want to be a Brahmin, because it was most difficult. A Brahmin was not allowed to own anything practically. He was not allowed to be employed. He had to go and beg alms like a humble beggar. And whatever people gave him, he had to give to the people in need. He didn't keep anything for himself. He had to have complete control of his senses. Now, there's not a single Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra who wants to live like that. Therefore, when they saw someone with such genuine characteristics, they adored him, they worshipped him, they loved him, and they followed him. When they saw such humility and such compassion and such mercy, they were willing to give their lives for such great souls. Krishna says, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namo. That Krishna is most favorably disposed toward the Brahmins and the cows. Why? Because when the Brahmins are properly respected and the cows are properly protected, then the whole society is perfectly situated for material prosperity and spiritual enlightenment. But when there is no faith in the Brahmins, and when the cows are being exploited, we can understand to that degree a society is rushing toward hellish conditions.
our Guru Maharaj used to say, that you can judge the spirituality of a nation or of a society very easily. All you have to do is see how the cows are being taken care of. To the degree the cows are happy and joyful and protected, you can understand there is God consciousness there. And to the degree the cows are being misused, slaughtered, and exploited, you can understand there is irreligiosity and sinfulness pervading. And another criterion is how people have faith in saintly persons. When people lose their faith in saintly persons, they have no head anymore. When a society has lost faith in the Brahminical culture, that society is a headless society. It is a blind society. It has no vision. It has no eyes. When the blind lead the blind, they all fall into the ditch. So you see, when this inexperienced Brahmin cursed the most righteous, religious, and God-fearing king, the people lost their faith in the Brahminical culture. And then everyone started thinking, making their own decisions. We cannot trust these Brahmins. We cannot trust these sadhus. We cannot trust these saints anymore. They are either in it for the money, or in it for the prestige, or they're just a bunch of lazy people. How can I let my life be guided by such persons? Therefore, I will have my opinion and I will live according to that. Or I will accept the opinions of politicians and welfare workers, but not the Brahmins. As soon as people lost their faith in saintly persons, Kali Yuga took complete control of this whole world. And just see the condition of the world today. If you read the newspapers, all you will see is corruption and violence based on greed, hunger for power, lust, anger, and utter illusion. And there is only one solution to the problem. The only solution to the problem is we have to purify our consciousness. And that purification of the consciousness can only take place when there is a restoration in our heart of faith in saintly persons. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Sastra Khoi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. That even one moment's association with a genuine sadhu can give one the opportunity for the supreme perfection of life. When Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die in 7 days, what did he decide to do? To fall at the feet of the saintly persons and hear from them. He knew that that was his only business. He knew that there was no greater gift of God than the association of sadhus. And he left his body simply bathing in the nectaring words of Srila Shukadeva Goswami. So this is a very, very important part of our life. And this is really the very glory of India. People do not come to India to solve their material ambitions. Indians go to America to fulfill their material ambitions. I have been traveling between India and America for about 20 years now, and I can say I have not met anybody from abroad who is anxious to come to India for sense gratification. Huh? But I can say in my travels through the world that I have met tens and thousands of Indians who go to the West for sense gratification.
If you go to the American Embassy, you will find hundreds, thousands of Indians who want to get somehow or other citizenship in America. But I've hardly ever found one American who wants to get citizenship in India. Why? Because Indians, to a large extent, are selling out the Brahminical principles of spirituality, and they're simply chasing after, like madmen, the sensory objects of the West. But when people want to come to India, generally it is only for one person. I mean, for one purpose: to find saintly people for enlightenment. Many people do come to India, but they are generally people who are searching for something spiritual. Because India is the land of spirituality. One of the most important books on religion throughout the world was written by a Chinese author. It was a book on world religion and what is religion. And in the introduction, he said, if you want to understand religion, the only possible way is you have to go into India and live there for some time. Otherwise, you will never really understand what is religion. It is the land of Dharma. The glory of India is in its saintly persons. But when saintly persons misuse their position, and people lose their faith, then they start putting their faith in the material facilities that are being offered by the sinful and degraded conditions of society. And then everything is lost.